This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Good evening, or morning, or afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. No matter what time of day you're listening to this broadcast, you have tuned in to the Hard Traveling Fanboys. I am Greg Phillips. With me, as always, is my co-host, Nick Duke. We are inside the L-shaped studios in beautiful
and serene
Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We are in Hoholoon Plaza, of course, not to be confused with the no-good Noam Dar arcade, completely different. And
no, he wouldn't have an arcade. Arcades are kind of cool. He would have like a – it would be the Noam Dar Antique Mall. That's what I'm going with.
I like it. Sadie's Noam Dar Flea Market.
Hey now, don't knock the flea market.
we are gathered here today, ladies and gentlemen, to talk about The Walking Dead, of course, because October is Walking Dead Month.
Yes.
And this would be a great time, by the way, before we get into the show, to remind people that they are listening to the longest-running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all of Place to Be Nation. And Walking Dead Month was originally – we originally had our schedule a little bit different. We were going to be looking at the game, the Telltale video game, Walking Dead Season 2 this week. But we did not realize that the season premiere of The Walking Dead was so close.
Yeah, so early in the month. Normally it's later, closer to Halloween. And this year they kind of bumped it all the way up to October the 9th, I think it was, or whatever. Whatever day it was, not October the 9th, October the 6th, October the 7th, whatever day, it doesn't matter. Point being, it was this past Sunday.
That's indeed correct. That is what the point is. And it was this past Sunday. So we decided to call what people in the profession, some of our peers, like to call an audible. We went up to the line of scrimmage of podcasting. We called out, I don't know, Blue 52 something.
You know, that's actually, Greg, that reminds me. You know what we haven't had in a while here on the Hard Traveling Fanboys? Is something that all of our listeners, I know, love hearing. And I think it's time, you know, that we...
Oh, no.
That we...
This is not part of Walking Dead Month.
This is, but this is content that our listeners want to hear. And so
this
I think it's time
anyway affiliated
for a little
Dead.
Hard-traveling fanboy fantasy football update. Tell me about your fantasy football season to this point, and more specifically, tell me about, just talk about, if you could, your most recent fantasy football outing.
Well, I'm going to tell you, this is a two-part question, right? I'm going to tackle the first question first. My fantasy football season to this point has been pretty good. I was at one point on the verge of being 3-0, I believe. And then I dropped one in a very close matchup with a very high-scoring opponent. I think I lost by a point and a half. Then I came out the next week and I got a win back. So overall, I've been having a good season to this point. I'm happy with my team for the most part. Very happy. Now, the second part of your question, pass.
No, the pass is not an option.
No, it is. I just did it.
No. Tell me, Greg, how was your most recent fantasy football outing?
Well, there were some circumstances that led to that situation. There was a kicker that I had named Robbie Gould who did not produce any points at all. Zero. And a goose egg on account of injuries unforeseen to San Francisco's 49ers. There was an inexplicable lack of use for certain players on my team, a Golden Tate, who is usually a stellar performer. There was an injury to the tight end position right now that I'm really struggling with. Evan Ingram's been on the shelf, so I had some people hurt, and we came up a little short. But but I'm still confident in the rest of the season, Nick.
And who was who'd you fall to?
I don't focus on my opponents. We don't focus on our opponents.
If you did, we can
only control what we can control.
That's true, but you know who you're. I mean, who are you playing?
I don't know. I didn't catch their name.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you. You can find their name if you go to the standings in the league, and you look at the top in the number one spot. That's the team you were playing. Just for the record, I want the record to reflect that. And even if you go over and click points, sort standings by points, that same team would also be in the number one spot. So, just wanted to throw that out there. Just wanted to make sure that all our listeners were aware of what the fantasy football landscape is currently here on the Hard Traveling Fanboys.
Well, you'd be happy to know, Nick, that over in the Team Zissou League,
No one cares about that.
I am 0-5.
Oh, actually, I am happy to know that. Never mind. Tell me more.
That was the league, if you recall, Nick, that because of us doing this podcast at the same time, the computer took most of my players, and my roster is just undesirable.
It's no Hilton Hulkamaniacs roster. I'll put it that way.
Screw the Hilton Hulkamaniacs. What is it you used to tell me, Nick, about the season?
It's a
marathon, not a sprint.
Well, that's fine. You can certainly have that opinion. And right now, you are running a marathon looking at my white alabaster keister. Put it
keister,
that way.
Stealing my verbiage.
You should know by now that neither of us have any original verbiage.
My roster in the Team Zissou League, Deshaun Watson, Tyler Boyd.
Hey.
Your favorite player, Nick, Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
I don't know who that is.
Albert Wilson. No one knows who that is. Kenyon Drake, who the Dolphins refused to hand the ball to for some unknown reason. Royce Freeman, C.J. Uzomah, and of course, D.D. Westbrook. Ridiculous. A horrible team. But in our league, I'm still happy with my roster. And I made a few additions today, Nick, that I think...
I'm stunned you made more moves.
...that are going to help my team if they go through.
Mm-hmm.
I've given up on Robbie Gould, the aged veteran. I'm moving on.
Well, best of luck to you the rest of the season, and I hope you enjoy the view from beneath my booted heels.
You are the most insincere fantasy football analyst that there is on this or any other planet. And as you know, pride cometh before the fall, Nicholas.
All right. Well, I wouldn't know anything about that, so. There you are.
Bastard. Well, let's talk about The Walking Dead, folks. We're not here to talk about all that garbage. We're here to talk about the season premiere of season 9?
9, yes, I think.
Of The Walking Dead. It premiered on AMC this past Sunday. We will go ahead and warn you that will be spoilers on this episode. We will talk about things... We will discuss them, and they will be spoiled. So if you have not watched the premiere of The Walking Dead, and if you are planning on watching the premiere of The Walking Dead, well, you can do one of three things. You can stop the podcast right now, go watch the premiere of The Walking Dead, and then come back and listen to our discussion about it. You can go ahead and listen to our discussion of it and then make up your mind whether you want to watch this episode of The Walking Dead. I know there are some that are on the fence about it. Or number three, since you've already downloaded the podcast to begin with, you can just stop listening now and never listen to it again.
Yeah. I mean, whatever you want to do. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah. So let's dive a little bit. Should we get a little background? We don't really need to give background.
I mean,
everybody knows how last season ended. We made our thoughts on that clear. It was not good.
No.
And it's not great, and it was not certainly not excellent. So what we wanted to do going into this season was give this premier a chance, a fighting chance, even though both of us have said that we are not excited about the show anymore. Nick's made it clear he's out. I am sticking around by sheer stubbornness, but I'm not happy about it. So we watched this season premiere, and the show we've talked about in the past, Nick, even last week when we counted down our top five episodes, that the show has a tendency to do a time jump of sorts between seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's extreme, sometimes it's very little, but there's usually some sort of passage of time between where one season ends and the next begins. Well, this year they did what I believe to be the biggest time jump yet that they have done on the series.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty confident in that, actually. They jumped forward a year and a half. Is that correct?
They never explicitly stated how long it had been, but I mean, it...
I've read it online. Yeah. I think that, supposedly a year to a year and a half.
Yeah, so what is that time frame? Less than 2 years, but more than a year. How about that?
Yep, something like that. So we jump forward in time, and instantly we're joining a group of familiar characters on a supply run. And things have clearly changed. Like, things are similar in some ways, but things have clearly changed since the end of last season. Here are a few of those changes that we see right at the beginning. Ezekiel and Carol are in a relationship with each other. They are romantically linked, as the children say.
The kids definitely, they say romantically linked. They want to romantically link with people. That's what they say all the time.
I think that's correct. And then Father Gabriel now looks like a black hair star. Can you deny that, Nick?
The whole time I was thinking Kung Lao, but I'll go with black hair star. That works.
Yeah, the one eye and all that, and the hat. And
he
stares
a scar on his head.
I hope he does. Oh, I hope he does. That would actually be a really nice homage. But they probably wouldn't. Jadis is now known simply as Anne and talks normal and apparently has some sort of a science background. So she's with them having regular conversations, wearing normal clothing with a normal person haircut, as opposed to the Dumb and Dumber haircut that she had before. What else do we have here? That's pretty much it for that opening scene. And then some of the other changes. Maggie has had her son. So we skipped the entire process of her ever showing that she was with child. Now she's had child, and child is somewhere in the neighborhood of a year, would you say, looks like?
Looks like it, yeah. I mean, maybe a little younger than a year, because he's not yet, even attempting to walk or anything. She's still moving him around and stuff. So, plus, she wasn't all that pregnant last time we saw her, not that I recall.
Exactly.
I mean, she was pregnant visibly, but not like it wasn't like she was about to pop or anything.
So, yeah, not much. It was barely showing.
Yeah.
So, and now also Judith, which okay, random. We just have to. We'll divert here. This is actually how I think I started our conversation the other day. Nick, how old is Judith?
No one knows.
Because I swear that it's the weirdest sliding age of any character I've seen in The Walking Dead. She should be somewhere around 6 by now, I would think. Around that measure. But she was a baby for seemingly 3 years, right?
Yeah, seemingly.
Then she became an infant last year, a toddler.
Mm-hmm.
And now she appears to be in maybe 4.
Yeah,
I
was only thinking like 4. Like, she can speak in complete sentences and carry on conversations, but she's still clearly very young.
Yeah,
4. I don't know. Whatever.
Is this some sort of side effect of the zombie outbreak that causes children to age in strange and unusual ways?
Who the fuck knows? I don't know, man. It's odd, though, for sure.
Yes. So, we're not going to go plot by plot through the episode, but the opening
not that it would take that long.
Is pretty important to talk about because they start us out in the middle of a supply run to I guess it was said on Talking Dead to be
Washington.
A replica of the state building. Yeah.
It's Washington, D.C., and they're going to a museum to steal old-timey farming tools, essentially.
Yeah. And so, a very unusual setting, actually, and I actually really dug the setting for this scene, Nick, because it reminded me of Resident Evil.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember the mansion setting in Resident Evil, mm-hmm. that's kind of what this whole kind of this whole scene felt like, was that scene where there's dread kind of from the setting itself of like, oh, is the girl, they're walking across this glass floor, which, now that I come to think of it, I think Klondike Bill would have been pretty interested in this building.
Yeah, Klondike Bill was definitely one of the zombies down there. He was rip-raring to go, and he wasn't, I mean, he was kind of bummed that the glass wound up getting cracked. I think he was hoping that Ezekiel was going to have a need, have an urge right there, yeah. You know.
Ezekiel, can't we wait until we get back to Alexandria? No, Richard, I believe I have to relieve myself right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Klondike's down there, and he's got that twinkle in his eye.
Mm-hmm. Even as a zombie, he still knows what he likes.
He knows what he likes. That's right. So they're in this building that bizarrely has, which I heard was based on a building in Atlanta, a real building, but bizarrely has this glass floor mm-hmm. that leads right up to a staircase. And at the top of this staircase is an old wagon for some reason.
Yep.
And
going to get an old wagon.
An old wagon. And now how...
A plow, actually, I think they said it was.
Like, yeah, a plow. An old plow.
Mm-hmm.
Now... This is apparently a vitally important mission for them
mm-hmm.
because they are willing to risk all of their lives to get this plow.
Mm-hmm.
And also, now here's one thing, David and I watched it with David Sunday. We were a little confused. We were talking for a moment, and what were they getting out of the horticulturists area? They go in and they get these little pouches of something.
Oh, seeds. Heirloom seeds, okay. Yes.
Yeah. So they get those and they get the old wagon, the old plow. And I don't know how they got this thing up these stairs to begin with without cracking the glass.
Well, they would have been, you know, the museum staff would have moved it.
Would have done that years ago, yes.
You know, tools and technology and whatnot. They probably
could have
used, you know, pulleys and those sorts of things.
There's a really cool scene, actually, where a walker falls from the balcony onto them to the glass floor below, and it's pretty freaky. And so there's a good little sense of dread here. I liked the music and the ambiance. Mm-hmm. And as they're having their ordeal of trying to get this plow down on this glass, the glass breaks. And at that point, I was terrified, Nick, that they were killing off King Ezekiel, which would have been a horrendous decision, in my opinion.
It definitely would have been, but. Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't.
They rescued him.
Here's my problem with this whole opening. I think so the opening is them going on a supply run, essentially. Like this is Walking Dead 101, because how many episodes have we seen built around we got to go on a supply run, right?
Yep.
But we haven't had one in a while because we've been so focused on war and building boring communities and whatnot. Not a whole lot of time for supply run episodes. So this,
right.
In a way, felt like a throwback. And years ago, we used to care about these supply run episodes because we genuinely cared about the characters. And watching this, I'm watching it play out, and I'm like, you know, this isn't badly made or anything. It's fairly interesting. The setting is cool or whatever. Everything's fine. And I just realized this is how much last season killed my enjoyment of the show. I did not give two shits about anything that was happening. Not because it was bad, but because I just don't care anymore. That's the realization I came to watching the first 30 minutes of the show.
Yeah, I could see that, because once we get through this scene, because I did feel tension for Zeke, because I wanted him to survive. I would have been fine with Anne falling through the glass. I would have been fine with Gabriel, for the love of all things holy, falling through the glass. I didn't want Zeke to fall to his doom. But anyway, we get out of once they get out of the museum, we then enter into what I consider a 30 to 40 minute lull of inactivity and boredom.
Yeah, because, I mean, okay, so we vary a little bit just because I didn't care about the museum scene, but it was fine enough. But really, this is an hour and 36 minute episode that doesn't pick up until the first hour is over.
Yes.
Like, the interesting part of the episode is all in the last third, and man, I just don't even. What do we even say about that? Like that, 35 minutes in between the,
that one kid died that no one knew who he was.
No one
or
knew
why
who
he was,
and he was only he died only to serve as a plot point for Maggie for later in the episode.
For later in the episode,
which is fine. We'll get to the Maggie stuff, and the Maggie stuff is really good. But in between, we have to make this long, bizarre. Stop at the sanctuary just to look at them and look at them. Oh, look at them. It's the saviors. There they are, hanging out. This is.
They still like. Some of them still want Negan back.
Some of them. And some. Half of them still want Negan back, and half of them believe Rick Grimes is the greatest man that ever lived. So, they're converting. They're converting.
You know that because in a vintage comic book Walking Dead scene.
God bless you, Rick Grimes.
The guys for the saviors walks up. It literally says, God bless you, Rick Grimes. And then parenthetically, the greatest man who has ever lived.
And then hugs him. And this is upon meeting him for the first time. This is
he wanted to kiss him, but Rick said, no, too sexy, sexy. And walked away.
Don't want to mess up the beard stylings with a kiss. Oh, God. So what else happens here? We get a brief glimpse at Eugene making ethanol, which is kind of cool.
He had a line or two, but I couldn't really make out what he was saying.
And then
Daryl pulls Rick aside.
In the interim between seasons, Daryl has been put in charge of the sanctuary, is the implication?
Yes.
And he doesn't want to be there because he was literally tortured there.
Yes!
And understandably has bad memories.
And stupid son of a bitch Rick doesn't want to hear him out.
No, he's like, wait a minute. I don't understand.
Now, so Rick is in charge of Alexandria. Maggie is in charge of the Hilltop, and they have to have somebody to watch over. We gotta have you here. We need you here, Daryl. Without you, this place will fall apart. Guilt tripping someone into ignoring their insecurities and their fears and their discomfort in order for Rick to have. Now the question could be asked: why doesn't Rick take Sophia and Michonne and move into Sanctuary? And let Daryl go into Alexandria.
Because Rick is too important to do that.
Mm-hmm. God bless you, Rick Grimes. We get a little glimpse in of that, and all that stuff's there. And there is a great little nice reunion between Daryl and Carol that was fun to see. Presumably, they haven't been around each other much in the interim, and so seeing them get to have their
Daryl's jealous because Ezekiel is. Clearly wrecking Carol's, world right now.
Rocking her world. Mm-hmm. And so Daryl and Carol they have a great heart to heart, and their relationship. And I've always viewed their relationship as being more like brother sister than anything else. And so they have that cool little. I know that certain Walking Dead fans would disagree with that, but they had a nice little moment there, and. I'm trying to think of anything else that happened in that entire stretch.
No, nothing.
Ezekiel proposed to Carol, and she did not accept. She told him to put it back, and he said that he informed her that he would wait. We also found out Jerry is still around. Most of the cast from last year is still there doing their thing, and they're all trying to work together to build a tenuous trust. Between the four lands, which is really just sanctuaries, the real problem there is nobody trusts them. Oh, we also find out that the Hilltop has had an election, has just come off of having their first Democratic election, and Maggie has defeated Gregory for leadership, if you can believe that.
And Gregory was somehow still allowed to run, despite blatantly selling them out to the saviors at every opportunity, and presumably everybody knowing about that, and yet he still was allowed to run. So that was good.
In a world where Negan is allowed to survive after bashing everyone's friends in front of them, who's to say what's right and wrong anymore? But that actually plays in. So again, this whole stretch is just horribly boring, not interesting at all. Nothing happens of note, and it's that annoying Walking Dead boring too, where it's like they kind of have a faint acoustic music playing in the background while people just walk and move in directions slowly. Mm-hmm. And people occasionally someone will look at somebody else and they'll nod and they'll stare pensively at them. and then other characters will smile at each other. And so that goes on for a very long time, much like this part of the podcast.
Yes.
But then we switch gears a little bit in the episode, and we move into...
And we decide, hey, let's make it interesting.
Let's make it interesting. And so we go to the hilltop, and we start focusing in on the people in the hilltop, Maggie and her crew, largely. And that's where things get good, because the parents... of the
Oh man.
We gotta talk about
this random kid that none of us had ever met before coming into this season gets killed during the run to get the stupid plow. And so 45 minutes after that we finally make it back to Hilltop and Maggie has to tell his parents that the kid's dead, and his parents they are none too pleased, and they express it by yelling at Maggie in the worst Southern accents of all time.
Well, I would say this. I thought the dad was actually good. I thought the dad was, you know, he was sad and he was, you know, low key, and the acting was solid. Brett Butler, who people may remember from Grace Under Fire in the 90s, she plays the mom, the very, very old mom. And holy Lord, Nick, it has been many, many years since I've heard a Southern accent on TV that's that over the top. And it's a real voice, I believe, but holy God, man, that was awful. And yet hilarious. Did you not laugh at that scene?
Oh, it was terrible. It was just awful. And I laughed, like, cause right after that, I followed up with a scene of them talking to Gregory, and like, here's a thing that The Walking Dead does. We've criticized it before, Greg, where they start writing characters completely differently. You know, after mid-season breaks or season breaks. Mm-hmm. When Gregory was around before, they kind of treated him like a buffoon. Like, he barely could remember anybody's name. He clearly thought that he was above everybody. He was trying to manipulate people and wasn't good at it because he was so damn transparent. And now we come back and he's remembering everyone's name. He's being very compassionate towards everyone. And people are actually buying in to his manipulative bullshit. And I'm like, wait a minute, did Gregory get smarter in between seasons? That was a little bit weird.
I was gonna say, Nick, I mentioned this to David, he didn't remember it, but like I thought there was some sort of a subplot over the last couple of years about Gregory possibly having dementia or something.
Yeah, he couldn't remember people's names. He couldn't remember Maggie's name. Yeah. He couldn't remember like who she was or where she had come from, and like they would say other things about what was going on in Hilltop, and it was clear that he didn't really remember the details or didn't care enough to remember the details, and so like of handling that character, which is fine. I understand they're trying to set him up as something sinister and something of a threat, which is fine. Yeah. But you've played him as a fool and a buffoon for the better part of 2 years.
He strikes me as he's portrayed very well by the actor, by the way.
Yeah, sure.
He strikes me as a slimy character who was kind of like, when he's pushed against the wall, he's going to do and say whatever it takes for his survival, first of all, and then for power, second of all. And yeah, it seemed the one thing that struck me as kind of weird is that Maggie seemed to be falling for his manipulations at the beginning of this. I didn't have an issue with him manipulating the parents because they were grief-stricken, and to me it made sense that Gregory would hatch this plan and this scheme to basically be the biggest political bastard in the world and twist somebody's grief into a political gain for him. But it's also in keeping with Gregory's character that it completely fails. Right. So, there was that, but I mean, I just got to go back to this. Like, you killed my boy. You got my boy killed.
And they're angry, Lord, because their son got, you know, their premise is he got killed trying to help out the sanctuary, because they're saying that this plow is going to go over to the sanctuary, and so they're gonna buy into Gregory's bullshit. But Gregory, go there, Greg. You can't back down now. Don't shy away from controversial statements, Greg.
Well, I was going to say, if there's one thing that I've learned to not be surprised about in the recent election cycle of the presidency, it's that never underestimate the public's ability
to be idiots.
To be idiots, yes.
There you go. Fair enough.
In any event, let's get off of that subject and let's move on to the effects of what Gregory does here. Now, Gregory's got a good name, Nick. A great name, in fact. But his evil plans don't tend to work out very well. So he tries to set up Maggie to be assaulted and perhaps murdered.
Murdered by this drunken by the drunken dad. So he gets the dad, who it's implied has an alcohol problem. He gets him drunk and then starts planting ideas in his head about how Maggie is the root of all evil in the hilltop. And so then he basically he goes out just whistling at dark, just walking around the yard is the impression I get, until Maggie shows up and he goes, "Oh, hey, Maggie, go check over there." Where the guy is hiding, essentially.
Yeah, go. Somebody has defaced Glenn's grave. Yeah. And this disturbs Maggie so that she goes to see what has been done to Glenn's grave. And she's pushing her son, her infant son, named Herschel, along to the side of this grave. And that's when she's assaulted. And it causes, by the way, the carriage to turn over, her baby to fall out of the carriage and almost be hurt. Enid tries to help her, and Enid almost gets killed, apparently, and apparently is crippled as a result of of having her head smashed against a rock.
The rest of the episode.
Yeah, she gets her head bashed in by a rock, or falls on a rock, so she's incapacitated. So then, like, you know, you got the it's just a bad situation, and Maggie's able to get the advantage on this grieving, drunken old man. And then she storms back into the house, confronts Gregory. He tries to stab her. She incapacitates him, and that sets the stage for what was a great closing stretch of the episode, Nick.
Mm-hmm. I would agree, because then Rick shows up at the hilltop finally to ask. So in the course of the episode, a bridge between the communities has washed out. And Rick is dead set that he must rebuild this bridge, and so he's here to ask the hilltop for more resources to rebuild the bridge. And she basically
he should have contacted Winona Judd, Nick,
because love can build a bridge.
Love can build a bridge. True. I don't know if you knew that.
I did know that. Between your heart and mine. But in any event, Rick asks Maggie for more resources. Maggie is clearly sick and tired of footing the bill for their people, and she says, "You know what? We'll give the sanctuary food, but they're going to put up our end of the labor on the bridge project." And Rick pretty much has to go with it because Maggie is finally putting a foot down, and she calls him out for saying, "Hey,
oh yeah, that was wonderful.
Remember when you told me that you were going to be following me one day? Well, that never happened. Now did it?"
It was almost, Nick, I don't know if you felt this way too. It was almost like Nick, which is you. I don't know why I said the name Nick. It's almost like Maggie was.
Well, you were thinking you were thinking of Rick Grimes, the greatest man alive, and so you were trying to search for a real world comparison, and I was the first thing that popped into your mind, obviously. So thank you for the compliment.
It's almost like Maggie was put into the position of being the voice of a segment of the audience.
Yes.
Of the show. Because yes. In one scene, it's one of my favorite scenes they've done in a long time. Mm-hmm. In one scene, Maggie calls Rick out on all of his bullshit in recent years.
Now, I agree with where you're going, but go ahead.
You said that you were going to let me be the leader when we were done with all this. Didn't happen. You said you were going to kill Negan. Didn't happen. Now you keep trying to have the position of leader and tell me what to do and tell us what to do, and that's not going to happen. Because now I'm a leader of people. I'm stepping up to make the tough decisions now that other people are afraid to make, and I'm no longer going to let the good people here get exploited by the bad people who you allowed not only to live but to survive and thrive off of our hard work.
And that's her point. Yeah, she's like, all right, so they surrendered. That's great. We let them live. We don't owe them anything else other than their lives, is basically what she's saying.
Right, exactly.
So this all happens. They're clearly at odds, and the ending of the episode comes. Maggie has all the children in the hilltop taken off to bed, and she publicly hangs Gregory in the middle of the hilltop for his attempted murder of her, basically saying, hey, this shit's not going to fly. You know, we're not going to allow this here at the hilltop. Yep. And Michonne and Rick both stand there looking aghast. And that is my biggest issue, Greg, is all these things that Maggie says and does in the last 30 minutes of the episode are 100% true, 100% right, and I am afraid the show is going to take the standpoint of Maggie is out of control. I think they are going to try and make us, as the audience, view the situation through the eyes of Rick and Michonne, and I have no interest in doing so, which is great, because I'm not going to be watching the show anymore anyway.
Here's the thing that it caused me to say, actually, out loud, as we were watching, David Sunday can back me up on this. I was sitting, when that scene happened, and Michonne sees the two kids, what happened was Michonne sees two kids wandering around and looking at what's about to be a public hanging, Clint Eastwood and Hang 'em High style, where they're sitting on the horse and he's going to get hung when the horse goes off. And then Michonne goes, "Maggie, don't!" And I literally said out loud, "Shut the fuck up, Michonne. Shut the fuck up."
They really have taken Michonne from, like, the biggest badass on the show to now she's kind of unbearable. Because
yes,
she's so in lockstep with everything Rick says or does. Yes. Like, it used to be that she would occasionally push Rick and challenge him, and now that's the other frustrating thing is, just because Rick is going away, Michonne is going to be the new Rick. Like, yeah. Daryl will be the point of view character, but in terms of those ideals and the frustrating aspects of Rick's character, that's still going to be around in Michonne, because she's going to view it as her responsibility to, quote, carry on Rick's legacy, whatever the fuck that means. A legacy, I'll again point out, was so wildly inconsistent from season to season, and is now based entirely upon Carl having a nonsensical change of heart in his final four episodes.
Rick's legacy of being a farmer, a peace activist, a warmonger, a murderer, a dictator, a democratically elected leader. Mm-hmm. You know, his very complicated legacy, Nick.
A man who shows up and literally murders his romantic rival in cold blood.
Oh, good Lord. But a man who has a daughter who ages at a an incredibly slow rate. But all of that aside, yeah, I can understand that worry. I thought, to me, this, I mentioned this to you on the phone, I think, yesterday before you had seen it. I ended this episode having not enjoyed the characters that I haven't enjoyed for a while,
mm-hmm.
i.e. Rick, i.e. Michonne, i.e. Father Gabriel and Jadis and all those dumb people. And I ended up loving the characters that I already cared about. Maggie, Daryl, Carol, Ezekiel, Gregory in a negative way. So, to that degree, it was kind of in step. I will say that the episode was good. It was, in terms of the overall structure of it, if you cut it, especially if you excised, it didn't need to be 90 minutes. It needed to be about, 60 minutes. Cut out all that bullshit with the freaking oxen pulling wagon or whatever the hell, and focus in on that hilltop stuff. You can do the supply run. You can do establish the need for this stuff. But yeah, the Maggie stuff in Hilltop was phenomenal. Like her confrontation with Rick, her behavior at the end. And I agree, I'm worried that the show is going to try to portray Maggie in a negative light. But what I was going to say positively in its favor, though, to their credit, I don't think The Walking Dead has handled nuance well for a very long time. Certainly in the Negan storyline, The Walking Dead has not handled nuance well at all. Everything has been pretty black and white. But in this episode, I kind of liked that there were shades of gray, because I did feel like the show was taking Rick to task at times. And I think that Maggie was positioned as a person who may, as you put it, maybe losing control. I think Michonne and Rick were positioned as unrealistic idealists to a degree. I think Daryl was positioned as someone who is not comfortable with a role in the group, really, as you might expect. I thought Carol was great when she was on screen. She was, she's clearly in a better place than she was a year and a half before this when the war was going on. She's found some measure of happiness, and it kind of scares her. to the point where she wants to kind of run away from it a little bit. So there was a lot of good things here. I thought the characters behaved more realistically, and they behaved more like human beings this year, or in this episode, than they did last year, which I think owes to the new showrunner, Nick, whose name, of course, is Angela Kang.
I knew that was coming, yeah. Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, there are definitely some nice things in the characterizations. I guess where I'm coming from is I've been burned by the show so much for the last 3 years that I am not take. I will believe that they are not trying to paint out, you know, paint Maggie in a negative light when it actually comes to fruition that she hasn't been painted in a negative light.
Sure.
For the time being, every Walking Dead trope of the last 3 years suggests to me that Rick is right at the, you know, at the exclusion of everyone else. And I have no reason to believe the show will take any standpoint other than that until they take a standpoint other than that.
Yes. Totally fair. Like I said, if people were expecting us to have some debate over this episode, they're going to be sadly mistaken, because I cannot – I enjoyed this episode. I thought it was a good – not a great, by the way. I've seen a lot of praise for this episode online, and I don't really get it. I think it's overrated from what I've seen online. I liked it. I thought it was a good episode, but there's nothing in this that if you had made up your mind one way or the other that you were going to keep watching or that you were going to quit watching, there was nothing here, in my opinion, that would sway you either way. And I would also say that if you were on the fence, I think maybe there's enough here that would make you give it another few episodes. So, you know, for somebody that was kind of waffling back and forth. For instance, I will probably, because it's not that big of a time investment, there's not that many episodes, I will probably keep watching until they give me a reason not to. You know, which they've given me plenty in the past, don't get me wrong. But I totally get it. The fact that you said you were done and we speculated would there be anything this episode could do to bring you back, I don't blame you at all for that, because there wasn't. It was a solid episode, but it wasn't that solid.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
It was altogether average. I think my issue is because I don't they've got me to the point of not really caring about most of the characters anymore, that opening scene doesn't work for me the way it kind of worked for you, and thus I have to sit for an hour through an hour of literally nothing to get to 30 minutes of actual, you know, intrigue and decent writing and plot development, and that's just not worth it. I mean, these 90-minute episodes, they used to be the exception rather than the rule, and now every episode's got to be 90 minutes, even when they don't warrant it, and this is a perfect example of it not warranting it.
Agreed.
No, I there was some good stuff in this episode, but it was altogether average. It reminded me of all the reasons I don't want to continue watching the show, and I will gladly listen to you tell me about the episodes, you know, in the future, but no, I believe they are going to end Rick up in the same position he's been for a while. They are going to try and paint him in some, you know, as the savior, the shining example of everything right and holy that everyone should aspire to in The Walking Dead. And if that's the journey this season has taken, you can keep it. Fuck it.
And if he dies, he will die and serve as the inspiration for people to be waffling in their decisions and
he will
come up with elaborate plans.
Here's my official Rick death prediction after watching this episode. It's going to take them, in true Walking Dead fashion, 5 episodes to finish this stupid bridge. Rick is going to die defending the bridge from a herd, and in his death, his heroic death, they're going to realize, it's going to shake Maggie and Daryl and Carol and everybody into realizing that this bridge is symbolic. It represents Rick's legacy, and it represents the ties between our community, and we've got to fight for those harder than ever. That is my official prediction for how this all plays out.
What's your prediction for Maggie leaving the show? Death or leaving?
God, I think she's just going to leave. I think they're just going to have her walk away.
Just go off into the wilderness with her baby?
Something like
that. Or does the baby die?
No, the baby. I don't think they'll do that. I think they want to leave open the possibility they can get her back at some point. I think they intended for Andrew Lincoln to leave. I think you know, the Maggie thing is something they're trying to deal with as best they can. And I have no... I'm not saying I've read anything. I'm not saying I have any reason to believe that. I'm just... It's a gut feeling I get from the way things are being...
I could... totally see your scenario on Rick's death playing out. I could also see them flip-flopped and Maggie being the one that dies and Rick walks off so they can make their Walking Dead movie or whatever the hell they want to do. But yeah, something like that. I think the most fitting death for Rick would be for him to come up with a plan, in this case to build this bridge, mm-hmm. and then once the bridge is built, Rick walks on it to test it, and the bridge collapses because his plan sucked.
It would be both satisfying to a certain extent, and yet probably one of the more ultimately frustrating things The Walking Dead has ever done. What are the odds that Negan kills Rick?
Oh my god, actually.
Like,
not high.
In the context of The Walking Dead, you know, based on, like you and I have said, everything the show has established for its entire existence, you know, underscores how stupid a decision that was by Rick to leave him alive.
That's good.
On the one hand, he kind of deserves it. Like, that would be, you know, the character of Rick Grimes deserves it for being that stupid. On the other hand, oh my god, how frustrating would that be? For, like, that's the way he goes out when he when they built up for literally almost 3 years, I'm gonna kill you, Negan, and then Negan just kills him.
The nihilist in me, Nick, kind of likes that. Weird, because I listen. All joking aside about how much I don't enjoy his character now. Doing our countdown last week did remind me that Rick Grimes at one time was a very good character. He does deserve a fitting death, but now I'm kind of thinking about it because you're right, Nick. Because one of our big problems with them keeping Negan alive is that exactly what you said, the internal logic of this show from the very beginning, from the very first season we saw this message being drilled into us, you cannot trust anyone. Because if you leave these people alive, for every one that does redeem themselves, you've got five that are going to be like the governor, that are going to be like the cannibal people, mm-hmm. that are going to end up coming back to haunt you, whether intentionally or unintentionally, they're going to come back to cost you lives. So the fact that Negan's there, God almighty, that would be so freaking appropriate. Although, you know, I would like Rick to get, if he is going to die and he is just going to leave, I would like Rick to get an appropriate and a cool and a powerful death, and that wouldn't be it, I guess. But man, it would continue the internal rules of the Walking Dead universe, which would at least be satisfying in that regard. Okay, Negan kills Rick, Maggie kills Negan.
And then Maggie just walks off.
And then herself. Yeah. In the ultimate Walking Dead ending.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, it just...
Watch them have Negan kill Maggie, and then Rick finally... That's what causes Rick to realize he needs to kill Negan finally, and he does... I don't know. I hope that doesn't happen.
I know we said that there was probably...
That's the interesting thing, is Negan wasn't in this episode at all.
Wasn't even in it, yeah. They put him in the trailer for next week. You know, I know we said that there probably was nothing they could have done to get me back or whatever, but do you think it's a mistake that they didn't even really try to do a big episode like that? I mean, I think they know how badly burned people were by last season, and I kept waiting for there to be some sort of, like, big hook or cliffhanger or something that was going to try and be their big pitch, their big sell. Like, this is what we're trying to get you to come back on. But no, they just kind of gave us a standard. Like, even by season premiere standards, this was a pretty paint by the numbers episode of The Walking Dead, I thought.
Well, here's why I disagree with you on that. I actually think they went about it a lot smarter than I thought they would. I thought they'd do what you said. I thought they would go the big shocking twist.
Something, yeah.
Something, some kind of big, like, cliffhanger. I was happy that they didn't, because, let's face it, that's why people have been burned by The Walking Dead in the past. Outside of the two-year-long stretching out of the Negan thing, people got burned out because The Walking Dead built itself on these big twists and swerves that weren't actual twists or swerves, mm-hmm. whether it be Glenn in the dumpster, whether it be, you know, ending a season finale and not knowing who got killed at the end of it and having to wait months to find out which of the cast members dies. Whether it be, you know, this is the big showdown with Rick and Negan. No, not really. Just kidding. Oh, this is the big showdown with... No. Just kidding on that one. I was happy that it seems like they're telling a story. They know where they want to go with the story right now. And it felt to me like this was laying the groundwork through what happened at the end for the clear delineations of how people are. One other thing I appreciated about this episode is we had complained about how out of character everyone was at the end of last season. In particular, Daryl, Maggie, Jesus, all of them were so out of character. Which, okay, again, the freaking worst character is Jesus. I mean, he's no karate kicking walkers. Literally karate kicking.
Hey, speaking of that, how did Jesus not have anything to say about her hanging Gregory? Like, of all the characters that should have had something sanctimonious and stupid to say, it should have been Jesus, and they...
But I will say that the everybody
they
in this episode... They walked it back. Everybody was behaving like themselves. There are conflicts. There are absolutely... It's clear that there's a conflict with Maggie and Rick in particular right now, and even with Daryl and Rick, but it's not like it was at the end of that finale last year where it felt like they were forming the Legion of Doom, did it not?
Yeah, it did. It did. The Injustice Society or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. No, anyway, this episode left me with very few strong opinions, and I feel like I've exhausted all of them at this point, so I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, what would be your – we always like to switch up our grading systems here at the Hard Traveling Fanboys.
Nah.
So what number and decimal point rating would you give it?
Out of what?
Out of let's say out of 20.
A number and a decimal point out of 20. Let's see, 10 would be average then, I guess. So let's go Let's go 11.2 would be
11.2. That's fair. I'm gonna go
the slightest bit above average. Like it doesn't. I don't know.
Whatever. I'm gonna go. I enjoyed it more than that. I'm gonna go a 14.3.
Well,
almost in the quality of being a very good episode, but not quite. Just a above average episode. So 14.2. 14.3, 11.2.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it, folks. If you were on the fence and you haven't watched the show yet, hopefully like I said, if you're on the fence, watch it and judge for yourself.
Yeah.
If you were already out and not interested, then you probably won't change your mind, honestly, based on it. Again, it's not a huge time investment, but
you say that, but God, if every episode is going to be 90 minutes and some of them longer than that.
I hope it's not. Yeah, I hope it's not. Yeah, I hope that this was a – I remember when the 1 hour – I didn't know it was 90 minutes. I remember when the hour mark got here, and there were 5 minutes left until 9 o'clock our time in Central. And I turned to David and I said, that's it? They've only got 5 minutes left, man. They better pick up the damn pace. There's nothing's happened. Sure enough, but yeah. So they could have hit a home run. This is more of a for me. This was more of a I'll call it a single, a solid single. And I think for you, it was probably a sacrifice fly, perhaps.
I guess I don't know. It was it was what it was, and I don't regret anything about my decision to no longer invest time in this. Put it that way.
Well, with that being said, despite the Walking Dead premiere getting mixed reactions from the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Walking Dead Month will roll on, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. We will be back with more Walking Dead content next week and the week after, including a review of Telltale Season 2, which is much, much better than than anything the show's done in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there's an interesting question of whether it's better than the show has ever been, but I don't know. We'll have to really consider that. I don't know. That's a bit harsh. And then we'll be reviewing the book, which is a world unto itself. Hitting the next couple volumes of The Walking Dead we did last year. A little low stab on it. But in the meantime, we do want your feedback. How did you react to The Walking Dead season premiere? Did it? A lot of critics really enjoyed this episode. Did it? You know, did it turn your knobs, so to speak, more than it did ours? Did you? I don't know if that's an expression or not. Did you fall more on Nick's side, more on my side? Did you not enjoy it at all? Let us know. Reach out to us on the Twitter. I am at gphillips865q. Nick is at nickduke87. Mm. And we can be reached at our lonely email addresses, Greg P at PlayStationNation.com and Nick D at PlayStationNation.com, at PTB and Pop on Twitter, and of course, the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page. Join us there for some great discussions on the world of comics, and of course, all our great shows here at Place to Be Nation Pop. We are going to take a break. When we come back on the other side, we have got the rundown, a rather somber edition of the rundown. We've got reading and watching and a few other little doodads for you here, or perhaps doodads.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling Warzone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB in Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post-Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows, plus others available at PlayStation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, from the break. We hope you enjoyed the advertisements here at Place to Be Nation. Pop! And look forward to all those great shows from all of our great colleagues here at PTB and Pop. But now we are ready. We are ready to to venture off into our weekly look at the news and notes in the world of comic books. We are ready, ladies and gentlemen, for a segment known as The Rundown. And unfortunately, all joking aside, all kidding aside, we have to – it is Walking Dead month, and the horrible timing of this, we have to kick off with some solemn news as Scott Wilson, who portrayed Herschel on the first four seasons of AMC's The Walking Dead, sadly passed away this past week. He was 76 years old. He had been in everything from In Cold Blood all the way through The Walking Dead. We talked a lot about him last week on the show with Jennifer Smith. His portrayal of Herschel was warm and kind and caring and added a lot of wisdom and joy to The Walking Dead. So Scott Wilson, he will be missed by all the fans. Played a huge part on building the Walking Dead community. with a great character, a linchpin character on the show, and really just an unfortunate coincidence of the timing of this, Nick.
Yeah, they had, you know, he's coming back at some point. Apparently he's filmed something for this season. I'm guessing some sort of flashback where he gives wizened old advice to Rick before Rick's final demise. But yeah, great actor, great performance, great character. So what more can you say? Rest in peace, Scott Wilson.
Absolutely. And if anybody has any favorite memories of Scott Wilson, be sure to leave them in the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page or send them to us on Twitter, and we'll mention those on the show for sure. Meanwhile, let's transition to a little bit of happier Walking Dead news. And that is, we had reported here on the show that Telltale's Walking Dead series was over before its time, that it had been cut short, and the first two episodes of the final season of the Walking Dead Telltale game had been pulled as a result of the closure of Telltale Studios. Well, happy to report that Robert Kirkman's Skybound Entertainment is taking over production of The Walking Dead, the final season. Mm-hmm. And they announced, Kirkman announced that they plan to keep the entire Telltale development team intact so that they can be the ones to finish this season out and give fans of this game the ending that they deserve. So really good news coming out of a bad situation with Telltale.
It really is. It's outstanding news. I'm glad that we'll get to see some closure here, because unlike something like, you know, the Batman game or the Guardians of the Galaxy game, where they were based off of these long-running properties that were likely never going to get true endings, we are probably going to get a real ending for the character of Clementine, who we followed since season one of this game. So I'm glad this is going to be able to be completed and that the whole thing will be out there for fans.
Absolutely. So this is really really good, really good stuff for us. And I know this now gives us the impetus to finally catch up on this series, mm-hmm. right, Nick? So,
but yeah, I need to finish season. I had to play season three before I can play season four, though.
Exactly. Same here. So maybe as the holiday season approaches, we can get on that at some point. But that's very good. Well, speaking of Image Comics, though, of course, The Walking Dead all goes back to Image Comics, which gave it its start in the printed page. The founder of Image Comics, or one of the founders of Image Comics, and probably its most the creator who is most associated with Image Comics is Todd McFarlane, who of course created Spawn back in the early 90s and was the legendary Spider-Man artist before that. Well, Todd McFarlane is directing a Spawn movie that will be different from the 1990s Spawn movie that Nick and I reviewed right here on the show. And he's written it and he's directing it, which is interesting because he's never directed a feature film before. But according to his panel at New York Comic Con this past weekend, McFarlane is plotting a Spawn trilogy. He says, my definition of dark and scary is different from other people. I don't see a lot of kids in the crowd today, and so I am making this movie for you. I like all these superhero movies, and we've had these tastes before, so I just want to give people something different. I hope there's a hunger for what I want to give to people. You know, he says he wants a trilogy. So, now, Nick, my thought on this story is kind of that this is not the first, nor will it be the last time that we've seen these grandiose ideas of franchises before they even get one under their belt. And that's what kind of worries me about it is, you know, it's okay to have plans in the back of your mind for the future, but maybe get one under your belt before you start talking about trilogies or franchises out of it.
Yeah, this is kind of a non-story to me, like, honestly, because pretty much every, like, we are under the impression that every superhero movie that ever comes out, or every comic book movie that ever comes out, is an attempt to launch a franchise. And so, you know, here Todd McFarlane's just being a bit more transparent than most people. Like, you know, do we actually believe any of these writers who go, oh, we have no plans, we didn't even think about a sequel when we were writing this? Bullshit. Like, everybody knows that you at least have the vague idea of where you would go in a sequel when you're making these things. And so to hear him just pretty much acknowledge it and say, hey, yeah, that's where we'd like to get to, it's kind of refreshing a little bit to hear a little bit more transparency. So obviously you got to make one first and it's got to be successful, but who knows?
I don't
we'll
think
see.
The makers of I don't know if the makers of Catwoman planned on a sequel or not, but I don't know.
You say that, and yet Ghost Rider got, you know, a sequel.
So. That's true. Spirit of Vengeance.
I am sure that most superhero most comic book properties have been made with a sequel in mind.
Well, speaking of sequels, Nick, what an excellent transition for us, because a movie that we did not have a great reaction to say the least here on the show was Suicide Squad by David Ayer. We did not like the movie, neither of us, and we're not particularly excited about a sequel, and that is until news that came out just today as we record this, actually, which is that deposed Guardians of the Galaxy director James Gunn is apparently signed to write a treatment for the Suicide Squad sequel, and apparently is being eyed for the director's chair as well. So DC apparently has nabbed James Gunn to be the writer-director of the Suicide Squad sequel. And as a result of that, now our boy Big Dave Bautista says he also wants to be a part of this film because that's how much he admires James Gunn. He says the following. He says, "Where do I sign up?" So Big Dave's on board if they want him. James Gunn is on board to write and direct. I got to say, his sensibilities, this feels like a perfect fit to me, Nick. I was just talking with somebody at work today about one of the best episodes of Justice League, which was Task Force X, the Suicide Squad episode of Justice League. And just James Gunn's sensibilities about how to write teams, how to write characters with...
They largely failed at that attempt. So, on paper, this should work.
Yes.
That being said, it's a Warner Brothers DC movie, so...
When has that worked, right?
There's a long way to go between paper and finished product, but this seems as safe a bet as we've had in a while, so... Fingers crossed. I mean, if they find a way to screw this up, then good God, what else? What are we doing?
What are we doing?
Yeah.
And speaking of things that seem to be apparent or seem to be obvious.
Oh God.
At one point in time, it seemed obvious that Ben Affleck would be doing a Batman movie, a standalone. Mm-hmm. Non-affiliated with other characters, Batman movie. However, over the course of the last, really, 2 years, a whole lot has changed. Zack Snyder has been booted from Warner Brothers Pictures for the most part. Ben Affleck has had personal life issues. He's had, issues with the direction of different movies and stuff like that, had a script that he wrote that didn't work out for Batman. So there's been a lot of issues. And so the general consensus in recent months has been that Ben Affleck was done, that Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill were both going to be replaced in their brestular roles as Superman and Batman. However, a new report has arisen from something called The Hollywood Life, which I don't know anything about. I know you're a big gossip magazine reader, Nick. Yes. How would you describe Hollywood Life?
Oh man, it's the it is the New York Times of Hollywood gossip magazines.
Oh, interesting. Well, according to this, Ben Affleck is actively lobbying to play Batman in another film. He wants another chance at it. The site cites an unnamed source close to Affleck, who says that he is inspired by Joaquin Phoenix's role as the Joker to try and keep the role of Batman for another film. He, quote, he is back in shape, not only for his health, but has found a newfound love on doing Batman at least one more time. He feels he isn't finished with what he wants to do with the character. There has been talk about replacing him, but he is now seeing what he might lose and really wants to play the character again, especially seeing what Joaquin Phoenix is doing with the Joker character. There's a couple of aspects of this story, Nick. Number one, I thought Ben Affleck did a fine job as Batman. I don't think that Ben Affleck was...
That's not the point. For me, anyway.
Well, we'll get there. I thought Ben Affleck did a fine job as Batman. I have no issues if he wants to come back and play Batman again. I'd be down with it.
I think he did a fine job, and I have issues if he decides to come back.
Number two, Joaquin Phoenix is not playing the Joker in the universe of Ben Affleck's Batman. He's playing a totally different Joker in a totally different universe. So, ergo, it is highly unlikely he would be acting opposite Joaquin Phoenix, but instead, Jared Leto. So, I don't really see how Joaquin Phoenix's portrayal or lack thereof would, you know, regardless of how that movie turns out, I don't see how that would really affect Batman itself.
Burn it all down, start it all over. Start the whole thing from scratch. That's where I'm at. That's where I've been at for a while. It's a tainted foundation that they are trying to build from. I am done with the old DCEU. I don't need to see anything else from it. Nothing. Burn it down.
That was your issue?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to have some sort of in-depth being wishy-washy.
No in-depth criticism. I mean, like, the man can do whatever he wants to. He's a grown-ass man. He's earned a lot of respect in Hollywood because he is a legitimate, critically acclaimed actor at this point. But my issue is, like, stop trying to make this version of Batman and this version of the DC universe happen because people don't want it. It's like, I think that's been proven at this point. They just don't want it. So why keep beating a dead horse?
You know what your problem is, Nick?
What's my problem?
You're just too afraid to hashtag release the Snyder Cut.
Oh, you know what? I'm not afraid of that because I actually think it might be better than the theatrical cut, but that's neither here nor there.
I don't have an issue with them trying to build from what they've got, if they can find a way to do it. Maybe they can. I don't know. They haven't proven that they can. I will say that as we're about to transition here, Nick, we're about to transition into an actual DCEU film, technically, although it doesn't appear to have any outward ties to the other films. If the DCEU can rebound with its next couple of outings, we'll see. I'm fine with maybe trying to salvage it. We'll see. Maybe not that version of Batman. Maybe not that version of Superman. I don't know. We'll see. But we did get a new trailer for Aquaman.
Not even this. I wouldn't even call this a trailer. Good God.
No. Like, how long is it?
Five and a half minutes or something like that?
This was an outright preview of the film.
Right.
Similar to when we saw the opening scene of Dark Knight Rises, mm-hmm, in the theater. So, of course, this isn't a chronological scene here. This is a kind of a mishmash of scenes. Gave away a lot.
A lot,
gave
yes.
Gave away a lot, including, I'm not going to spoil it, but if you watch the trailer...
We're having a discussion about the trailer. This is not spoiler. No, we're gonna discuss what was shown in the trailer. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, then we see the suit, the classic, mm-hmm, Aquaman suit that I don't think anybody was actually expecting really to see, outside of maybe an homage. Mm-hmm. And it looked awesome.
It did.
I was a big fan of it. I thought the I really liked this trailer, Nick. I thought this was much better than the first one.
I liked most of it. I liked the colors of it. I liked the visuals, obviously. I liked the action. I liked some of the ways, like the way they depicted Mira's powers and stuff in it. I do have a few concerns.
Dialogue
being one.
Yep.
And the aloof dude bro characterization of Aquaman being another. Like, I don't know that that's necessarily going to be my preferred take on the character, you know, like when they're talking about how this trident is this big thing, you know, they're making this big deal and he's like, huh, what? Yeah, something about a trident. Like, just acting as if he's too cool for all this stuff that he's going on about it in the movie. But maybe that's just not, it's not fair to judge the characterization off of this one little snippet. I hope that is not the take they go with on Arthur Curry throughout the film. Also, the implication that the close personal tie between Aquaman and Black Manta as it relates to Black Manta's origin, I'm worried that it is implied anyway that may not be the case in this film. And I think that robs Black Manta of something that distinguishes him from a lot of villains.
Well, I'll address both of those points. I would be fine. I like dude bro Aquaman as long as that's not where he ends up, which the whole point of a character journey is changing. So I'm cool with him going from – that's Jason Momoa's personality. He's a laid-back surfer dude.
Right.
I don't want Aquaman to have Hal Jordan's personality or Superman's personality or any other character's personality. And I want him to be different.
Here's where it gets a little wonky. Are we supposed to believe that he's already been on something of a journey in Justice League or not?
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a fair question. It's a fair question because he has to, you know, go on a journey with these heroes or whatever. But I think that there is going to be a, you know, maybe anyway, I don't know. None of us know what it's going to be. But, like, I believe that it will be a journey of him becoming a king and having to grow up, essentially, and stop being the, you know, the guy that just boozes around doing what he wants to do all the time.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Well, you know, that's for each person to decide.
It is.
And I mentioned that. Now, the Black Manta thing, I think people are kind of looking into that a bit much because, yes, he does act surprised that he sees a dude with laser beams and a black suit, but that doesn't mean he wouldn't recognize him if he took off the helmet. This is probably the first time he's seen Black Manta. It may, and I would suggest, isn't the first time that he's seen the guy under the helmet. Because I believe they're probably going to go with the Black Manta looking for revenge angle from the comics. Most likely.
Let's hope so. And that brings up another thing is, are you at least a bit concerned that Black Manta and Ocean Master both being heavily featured, at least based off the implication of this trailer anyway, both being heavily featured in one movie is a bit too much?
Could be. We'll see. Plus the trench. Don't forget about that. That's supposed to be
a movie
too.
A lot of stuff they're burning through here.
Again, we have no idea how much of the movie he's going to be in. We don't know how much of the movie the trench is going to be in. It could all just be setting the stage for things later. I don't know. But we'll have to see. But I was encouraged because, like I said on Facebook, I had issues with the dialogue as well. I did not. Some of the jokes fell really flat for me, to be honest.
Yes. Not that surprising because I criticize the humor in all these movies all the time. So,
right. So, but the these jokes were not Marvel level in this teaser. I think at the very least, even if the dialogue sucks, even if the characterizations aren't what I want. Although they mostly look on point, your mileage may vary on Aquaman. Some of that's messed up. At the very least, it looks like the most visually interesting DC movie to date by a mile.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And maybe one of the most visually interesting superhero movies we've gotten in a long time. It's doing really different things that we've never seen an underwater kingdom before. You know, the colors, the creatures. There's a lot of room with Aquaman that I think people are going to be surprised if they don't know Aquaman comics. Are going to be surprised by how much of a Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings kind of vibe there can be to stories in Atlantis. So, interesting stuff. We'll have to see how it turns out.
And we will in a couple of months with Aquaman Month, which is coming up in the month of December.
Right here on Hard Traveling Fanboys.
Mm-hmm.
Another trailer came out this past week, Nick.
Indeed.
The trailer for Season 3 of Marvel's Daredevil.
Yes.
On Netflix. We've talked a little bit about the build-up to this season. It looks like it's going to go very dark. It mm-hmm. seems to be very Frank Miller-influenced.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I've read any of Frank Miller's Daredevil, but nope. I've heard about it.
Yep.
And it's on the list.
We've read the Wikipedia.
We have not conversed with Frank Miller's Daredevil.
We did talk to the Wikipedia.
Talked to his Batman earlier. A lot of fans here to read Frank Miller's Daredevil about Batman. Quite frankly, a lot of fans here.
Some fans here to read his Daredevil as well.
I do not claim to understand it.
Well, there it is.
Anyway, but we got the trailer for the new season of Daredevil. We've been over yes. Daredevil before. Both of us love season one.
Mm-hmm.
You love season two.
I liked season two.
I was lukewarm on season two. Season three trailer.
Oh, this looks awesome.
Very interesting.
this looks awesome.
I'm probably not as high on it as you. But I can. This is like catnip for Nick Duke.
Yes.
This kind of a story. The hero is completely appears
miserable,
to be broken down.
Yes.
Miserable. Life ruined. What else is new in Daredevil?
And things seem to start bad for him and just get continuously worse. And
yes,
the Kingpin seems to be winning at every turn. And that's just yes. All of that. Give me all this.
And we're seeing the Kingpin turn the table, turn the corner, really, from what he was in season one, which was a guy that sort of had good intentions in a way, even though he was just kind of Breaking Bad, so to speak. And then, and now he's just much more transparent with and comfortable with just being a complete asshole. And looks like we're going to get that born again kind of story with Daredevil. Very, very interesting to see, and good stuff all around. Nothing bad to say about this trailer. I'm excited about it. Does look like they're going to go to the well of the prison fight again from last year, which they won't be able to top. But looks good, man. I'm pumped. We have an imposter Daredevil at the end that you and I speculated could be Bullseye.
Mm-hmm.
Just good stuff all around. I'm excited. And I have a suspicion that we may see the end of one Foggy Nelson this year.
I actually think they're going to go a different direction that will make you much, much happier.
I won't believe it until I see it. And I know you're thinking about old crying Karen, but I'm not going to believe they're going to do it. I won't believe it because I don't think that they want to be accused of fridging her. So, I think that they'll keep her alive and so she can cry more and mourn Foggy's impending death. But we'll see. That's where my money's at, though.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think that they'll take after the current comics and kill Daredevil?
No.
I don't either. But nonetheless, looked good, I thought. So
yeah, this looks awesome. I'm pumped for this. I need to hurry up and finish Luke Cage and Iron Fist so I can get on to this.
But in the realm of catnip for Nick Duke, Duke Nip, if you will, nothing comes close to Jason Aaron writing the long-awaited Thor story, mm-hmm. War of the Realms. It's been officially announced. It's coming out in 2019, April 2019 to be specific.
Getting Russell Dodderman back on art, by the way.
Art by Russell Dodderman, yes. Spend a little bit more time with your Dowderman. And thank you for that, Nick. I am certain virtually none of our listening audience outside of a handful will get that reference, but nonetheless. So, Nick, you're the Thor man. What do you think of this?
It's exciting. It's been being built to since literally, like, back during Jason Aaron's Thor Got a Thunder run. So pretty much since he came on to the character. I am wondering if it's going to be just a story in the Thor book or if it will be a true Marvel event. I don't know. I haven't heard any indication either way. Seemingly Jane Foster's Thor is going to play some sort of a role in it. So her,
I thought she was dead.
No, they brought her back to life. Or they brought her back to life literally after they killed her.
What do you make of that, Nick?
I wasn't a huge
adamant that she needed to be dead.
Well, she did. They did kill her, and then they brought her back, but only as Jane Foster. They said that the Thor persona was dead or whatever. But it's kind—I mean, like that was one of those things, Greg, where about halfway through the Jane Foster Thor run, when you got the impression that it was landing with people, that there was no way to actually kill her off for any long period of time, because with the issues with representation for women and minorities in comics right now, if you create, or not create, you know what I mean, offer a female hero that lands with people, you can't then take that female hero off the board. Marvel editorial was never going to allow that. So it is what it is. I'm pumped for this, though. I'm excited to see how they play this all off. It would not surprise me if this might not signal the closing of Jason Aaron's Thor run. This has been what he's been building to the entire time. I don't know what else he would do after this. So that on the one hand, that kind of concerns me, but can't wait. Can't wait for this.
DC fans are not being left out in the major book announcement front, though, because also announced at New York Comic Con this past weekend, writer Josh Williamson and artist Howard Porter announced that they will be doing a story arc in 2019 in The Flash titled The Flash Year One. And this Year One story will be an arc, and it will be about Barry Allen's first year as The Flash, as he's ready for this, Nick?
Mm-hmm.
This is me freewheeling. We're kind of freewheeling right now. As Barry Allen finds his footing as The Flash. Oh, come on. I give you fucking gold, and that's what you give me back? Anyway, The Flash Year One, it's going to happen. It's going to be about Barry Allen, and it's kind of something that's not been done with Barry Allen. So, very cool. Interested in this story.
Most superhero origins have been told and retold to death at this point, but Barry Allen's, I mean, it's kind of like, hey, you got struck by lightning. You know?
Yeah. He's largely been left alone. The only major changes to his origin have been when Geoff Johns introduced the concept of his father being framed for the murder of his mother.
Right.
But like, other than that, his foundation has always kind of been the same.
Yeah, I'm not reading The Flash. Yeah. You know, as you know, I picked it up during the start of Rebirth and didn't wind up sticking with it. So I probably won't read this. If I do, it'll be a year after the fact or a couple years after the fact. But I'm glad people are excited.
Yeah, I'm not reading The Flash right now either. Although I really enjoyed Flash War. Again, I was very impressed because I didn't like Williamson's Flash run when it first started.
Right.
And that Flash War story was damn fine. Mm-hmm. So maybe this will continue the positive momentum, albeit without one Wally West. Moving along to the next item on our agenda, which is Brian Michael Bendis, the legendary creator of a variety of amazing characters and books, currently the shepherd of the Superman line at DC. He announced over the weekend that he is getting his own imprint at DC that is aimed at teenage readers. Remember, they've recently announced a line aimed at young readers, at middle school-aged readers. Now they're aiming at the high schoolers with a teen line that includes the titles Naomi, which I know you're really excited about because you love To Feel the Glow.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Wonder Twins. Then there is Dial H for Hero, which is a classic concept being brought back and reimagined. And perhaps most exciting, I don't think perhaps, definitely most exciting for established comic book fans, Young Justice. Bendis says that this will be in continuity and will be a personally curated line of teen-focused in-continuity comic books scheduled to debut in early 2019. Mm-hmm. The Young Justice team will include Impulse, Superboy, Connor Kent, who has not been around since the Rebirth Initiative started, since the early days of the New 52, and this version of Connor Kent hasn't been seen since Flashpoint, and Robin, Tim Drake. That's right, Tim Drake as Robin. A lot of interesting things to unpack here, Nick. First of all, I'll mention these titles here. Naomi is written by Bendis and David Walker, drawn by Jamal Campbell. Wonder Twins, written by Mark Russell, drawn by Stephen Byrne. Dial H for Hero, written by Sam Humphries, drawn by Joe Quinones.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Young Justice, written by Bendis, drawn by Patrick Gleason. Should be awesome. All this sounds great, Nick, and I will address my one question after you let me hear your thoughts on this announcement.
Oh, clearly I'm very excited. Now, I say that I'm more excited about the concept than I am necessarily, like, I'm not going to read the entire line. Like, again, it's... As much as I love Ultimate Spider-Man, it hit me at a time and a place where I was the target audience.
You know? Yeah, you were a teenager.
Right.
Yep.
So this, I will probably try out the Young Justice title just because I am intrigued by that. But the other ones, I probably won't. But I hope it – I genuinely hope it does well.
It's such a great idea to reach out to that audience. There's not enough for that audience. So very good and hope it will do extremely well. And maybe one day, Nick – maybe one day you can be to another fan, like you can feel about this line kind of the way that Todd razzes you sometimes about the Ultimate line.
Maybe. Let's hope that this lasts for more than a decade and produces numerous long-lasting contributions to an entire universe the way the Ultimate Universe did.
Let's hope that Jeff Loeb can come in and
murder it and not murder it, but cripple it just enough so that it limps on for another few years, slowly bleeding out in front of everyone.
Okay, here's
not murder it, just mortally wound it, but not mortally wound it like it's going to die soon. Like just let it limp on, you know, Greg. Just let
death
it suffer
by a thousand cuts.
Let it suffer. Let it crawl its bleeding, beaten carcass across the desert for another 3 years before it finally mercifully dies.
And there's nothing short of dying that's half as lonesome as the sound. Here's my issue with this. Not an issue. It's not an issue. I want to make that clear. It's not an issue. I don't have nearly the nostalgic attachment to Tim Drake and Connor and Cassie and Bart as a lot of people do because I was checked out of comics when they became popular, largely.
Mm-hmm.
I do like Connor a lot. But if this is in continuity, it's almost going to have to be a retro title, right? It's going to have to be a title set in the past, presumably.
Yeah, I was wondering that. I don't know.
You can't have Tim be Robin again.
Oh, they could. Now, Greg, I hate to even... Well, now, here's one option. What if, in the story, they go back a few years and they grab Tim Drake and Connor Kent?
Oh, God.
And Bart Allen.
Oh, no.
Yep. And they pick him up from that time period and they bring him to our time period.
Are you suggesting that Brian Bendis would use the time displaced gimmick again?
Is it not possible?
He's your boy. You tell me.
I kind of hope he does.
Well, that, oh, for God's sake, that, whatever, What a ridiculous UFC headline that is. Anyway, listen, I don't have any issue with – I'm happy. Everybody's excited about Young Justice coming back. They love these characters. I get it. I don't like the time displaced thing. However, I would say it probably works better in DC than it does in Marvel.
Yeah, you kind of have a built-in excuse there with Bart, right? Like you could just
– Right. Bart himself is time displaced.
Right.
DC is kind of steeped in its – I mean one thing that reading Zero Hour right now is – spoiler alert – is doing for me is reminding me that DC is – always been steeped in weird time travel stuff. So it kind of makes sense from that standpoint. It wouldn't be as egregious to me as doing it with the X-Men. But I don't know. Maybe you're right. That could be how they do it. Because I did notice in the image as well that Connor is not dressed like the Connor Kent of the 2005, 2006 Connor Kent or whatever, that era of Connor. He's dressed like he was in the 90s with the leather jacket, the Superman outfit underneath, a little bit modified. So, and the other question that I would have out of this naturally is I'm a huge fan of John Kent and Damian Wayne, and I hope that they're not – there's room for all these characters, what I'm saying. So I'm glad. I hope Connor's back for good. I hope Cassie's back. I hope Bart's back for good. Tim's back. There's room for all these characters, but they probably can't play the same role, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, especially like you said. I mean, how do you distinguish or find a place for both Connor and John, for example? It's going to be interesting, but that's something DC's always had to do with their legacy concepts is try to find, roles for all these characters. So,
and for the most part, they've done a great job of it over the years, with the exception of that new 52 blip on the radar. But yeah, so very exciting news here. I know a lot of people are happy about seeing these Young Justice characters back. So going to be fun to monitor moving forward. Moving forward on the rundown, we're going to move on to our last item on the agenda today, and that is the official costume reveal for Batwoman in the Arrowverse. The company tweeted it out, Stephen Amell tweeted it out. We have seen Ruby Rose as Batwoman for the first time. And again, I've only seen Ruby Rose as in John Wick 2, where she didn't have any lines, but this looks awesome, Nick. This looks like they absolutely nailed the look of Kate Kane.
Oh, the look is fantastic. I have no issue with the look whatsoever. I mean, they looks like they directly picked it up off the comic book page and dropped it onto the television screen. So fantastic. I don't like you. I don't know much about Ruby Rose as an actress, so that's really my only concern here. And I wouldn't even call it a concern. It's just an unknown to me. So yeah, this looks awesome. Kudos to them for not reinventing a wheel that, it's kind of perfect. That Batwoman costume is kind of awesome. It's visually distinctive. It's familiar enough. It's similar enough to the Batman costume while being visually distinct. So this is great look. Ready to see it in action.
Reinventing the what, Nick?
The wheel.
Thank you. That's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the end of the rundown.
Mm-hmm.
And that can only mean that it's time for a little segment, the audience all know.
Is there any point in doing this segment?
Reading and watching. Reading and watching. What you be reading and watching? What you been reading and watching? Nick, what you been reading?
Nothing.
I have been reading Zero Hour from DC Comics.
Ah, yes.
1994. And I will be reserving all my comments for an upcoming podcast appearance.
Actually, that's not true. I have been rereading a lot of the old Ultimate Universe stuff from early in that run, just because, like I said, I finished Spider-Man PS4 and went back and reread some Ultimate Spider-Man and then kind of fell into the chronology. And so I've been kind of slowly doing that, but nothing new to report. And Doctor Strange and stuff. And so sometimes you would get like these, like for example, there's a fantastic Ultimate Daredevil, Ultimate Punisher, and Ultimate Spider-Man story that is drawn by Bill Sienkiewicz, and it's awesome. And then you will get ones that are just the absolute hottest of garbage. Like, it's just it is the most inconsistent thing. The Doctor Strange story in particular is some of the worst comic book art I have ever seen in my life. Like, I don't even know the artist's name. I could not describe to you how bad it is. And yet it was published.
What you're saying is, in my life, I've never seen art like that.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Nick, have you listened to any Paul this week?
I have not. Unfortunately, I wanted to. I didn't get a chance, though. You know, there were certain events that played out over the weekend that...
we don't want to give utterance to here on the show.
Fair. Decent. Not too shabby. Is it... You know, it's sad. It really is sad what it says about us that, like, our own respective college football teams... Have won their games. Not just won their games, but won all their games in dominating fashion to this point. And yet, probably the most joy we've gotten out of anything this college football season happened in the great state of Mississippi this
the
past
great
weekend.
State of Mississippi. Nick Fitzgerald, governor.
Oh, that was awesome. Anyway.
I'm reminded of a great quote from a great man named Mr. Robinson, who once held his own neighborhood, if you may recall, Nick.
You mean Mr. Rogers?
Oh, Mr. Robinson's neighborhood.
Okay.
And he had the legendary quote that I'd like to repeat right now. I'm so glad the bitch is gone.
Oh, that's good.
We're going to move on from that now. That was pleasant. Mm-hmm. But what's not pleasant... What's not pleasant at all is that I also haven't been reading anything except Zero Hour. Mm-hmm. So I still haven't. I gotta read Doomsday Clock number 7 mm-hmm. to get that in the rearview mirror, and I plan to do that at some point. Actually, probably tomorrow. In fact, so that'll be there for next week's show. Mm-hmm. You got to catch up on Doomsday Clock. I'm interested to get your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Bring it with you to Baton Rouge,
probably.
And get you some alligator shoes while you're there.
I do have knockoff alligator shoes that I wear to games. You know that about me, so.
Yeah, and you're bringing them to Baton Rouge. That'll be a big hit with the locals.
It probably will be. We'll see.
Who did that song, Nick? I know Garth Brooks is Baton Rouge. Colin Baton Rouge,
yep.
I don't know the singer of that other version of Baton Rouge, the alligator shoes one.
I'm going to be honest, Greg. I don't have a clue what the fuck you're talking about.
My God, folks, this is an unprecedented event. I am breaking from the time-honored format of our show, and I am going to Google Baton Rouge, I'm gonna get me some alligator shoes. Unless I always heard that lyric wrong. Guy Clark, Baton Rouge.
All right.
The lyrics go a little something like,
my Lord Greg, I just made a discovery that is exciting in nature.
Tell me.
Did you know that Garth Brooks' Colin Baton Rouge is actually a cover?
I did not know that, no.
And do you want to know the musical act, Greg, that first put a little Colin Baton Rouge on the...
Is it John Anderson?
No. Even better. Ooh. Even better. Let's listen in. There they are. That's a little ensemble action.
Get that shit off the air, Nick.
From the great state of Tennessee... Listen to that. That's beautiful. Yeah! The Oak Ridge Boys, ladies and gentlemen.
I've lost the will to live as a result of that.
Well, clearly your baby's not American-made.
Oh, that song. How can anyone like that song? I try to understand people's points of view. Mm-hmm. I try to accept mm-hmm. it. Art is subjective, and everyone's mm-hmm. tastes are different. But, Nick, how can you like that song? How can you possibly like that song?
My baby's American-made. She's born and bred in the USA. What else do you want?
a Sony Color TV or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terrible.
A Nikon camera, a Sony Color TV. But the one that I love is from the USA and standing next to me.
Good grief. Well, no, I have not been reading anything. I have not been conversing with anything. I haven't been watching anything, I don't
but,
think.
No, we haven't, but that all changes starting next week because...
Right, our stories are
our
back.
Our stories are back, yep. I had forgotten that our stories were coming back already, so... until I saw The Flash on my DVR tonight, so... that's a little inside information. As we're recording this, the season premieres of both The Flash... And Black Lightning, is that already back as well?
Yes, Black Lightning.
So yeah,
back as
we are. Black Lightning's back. so we'll have the full reviews of both of those next week. And so I guess I would assume at some point we got to discuss how we're going to handle our schedule this year because the Supergirl moving to Sunday and everything. We got to.
Yes, there have been some disruptions thanks to the CW's idiotic shuffling of shows.
Uh huh. But we'll figure all that out, and we'll bring you some content next week in the watching category.
We will. We will do that 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. What else is there? That's it. I'm not watching, not reading, not playing.
That's all there is.
And however, Nick, I do notice that there's about 1 minute on the clock over there, and that can only mean that it's time for the wrestling minute.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, Raw happened.
It was good.
Last night. It was good. I thought a very good Raw, Nick.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Had good stuff all around it.
Great main event.
Bobby Lashley turned. The main event, as you said. You had some good stuff. Good. I mean, one of the more solid episodes of Raw in a long time. Just solid through and through.
Shawn Michaels coming out of retirement officially.
Yep, that's exciting. My
main man Bobby Lashley.
we are pro Shawn Michaels returning, whereas I know a lot of people are against it.
That's a controversial opinion to have in some circles, Nick.
Yes, but I'm for it. The man is the best in ring performer of all time, and I'm excited to see what he still has at this point.
Big news out of New Japan, of course. We have an official signing of Chris Jericho versus Evil for November. Jericho cutting a scathing promo on Evil at the recent New Japan show after a great surprise moment.
Mm-hmm. And then also the finals of the Tokyo, or the main event of the Tokyo Dome in January seems to be officially set with Hiroshi Tanahashi against Kenny Omega. So that's exciting as well.
Absolutely. Well, that's all the time that we have to talk about that. We will follow up more. I am currently working my way through watching the Long Beach New Japan special on my DVR.
I need to do that as well. I've not had a chance yet, but
I'm also going to watch Super Showdown from Australia, home of our friends.
When is Crown Royal or Crown Jewel or whatever the fuck it's called? When is that?
RC Cola takes place in Saudi Arabia in November, early November, I think. November.
Oh, so we got a while. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I didn't know. They were already ramping up the promotion, so it made it seem like it was much closer than it actually is.
It's very strange because of the Evolution pay per view. Mm-hmm. They're having to hype up both the all women Evolutions pay per view plus the all men Crown Jewel pay per view. So
indeed. So.
That's been the Wrestling Minute, and we will be sure to update you and regale all of you comic book fans with more of our unneeded wrestling opinions in the very near future. Well, gosh, Nick, I can't think of anything else. We've pretty well exhausted ourselves tonight.
No, it's been a good show. We've enjoyed talking The Walking Dead, and we hope you've all enjoyed listening to it. So for us here at the Hard Traveling Fanboys, at the studios here in Ho-Ho Loon Plaza, we have to bid you a good night, but there's no better way to end any show, I think, then with a little musical interlude, a little musical exit, a little way to play our way off the stage. And we debuted this segment last week, and I have to say the response was enthusiastic from our listeners. So here he is once again to sing us out, to take us home. Please, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the musical stylings of good old JR, Jim Ross.
First of all, before I start singing, I want to thank you for that intro there, Nick. You know, it was a tough weekend for old JR. Not a strong weekend, but I think coming up here and standing here in this environment around like-minded people, friends, and singing a little bit of karaoke here is going to make my heart feel better, and I appreciate that from the Hard Traveling Fanboys. Now, I want you all to just imagine the tune in your head, because I got a song for you right now that I think is going to be special to all of you. What's new, pussycat? Whoa! What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa! Pussycat, pussycat, I've got flowers and lots of hours to spend time with you. So go on and powder your cute little pussycat nose. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat nose. What's new, pussycat? What's new, pussycat? What's new, pussycat? Pussycat, pussycat, you are so thrilling, and I am so willing to care for you. So go and make up your big little pussycat eyes. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat eyes. Well, what's new, pussycat? Oh, what's new, pussycat? Oh, yeah! Thank you.